moving in and out. So I wanted to get another sort of survey of how many people here are former GK fellows also. Raise your hand. Oh, there's not that many of us anymore. How many people are teachers? How many people are PIs who have already had this program? How many are PIs who are thinking about trying to get this into their school? And everybody else, why are you here? Okay, so I'm kind of trying to adapt my talk a little bit more to say, to be a little bit closer to what I think people would be more interested in. Because when I made this, I sort of had in mind, when I talked to other GK fellows, like, what ideas have you done, and what could I do, and just trying to exchange lesson plan ideas. But I think I'll talk a little bit more about how San Francisco State has used the NSF GK-12 program. And let me explain a little bit. I did my master's at San Francisco State, so San Francisco State doesn't have a PhD program. I remember someone asking about that earlier, but we have an NSF GK-12 grant there, and now I'm at UC Berkeley, and they also have a GK-12 program there, but I'm not participating in it this year. And so I'm going to explain a little bit about how San Francisco State does it, what my goals were as a GK-12 scientist, and I have two lesson plans that I could go through semi-quickly, depending on if people are going to use them, and then just some miscellaneous tips that I've used throughout the year. So the way it works at San Francisco State is we're really lucky that we have this woman named Kimberly Tanner, who's a neuroscientist who did her postdoc at UC San Francisco, where she, instead of doing anything too closely related to neuroscience, she was a postdoc in their science education program. And so once she finished there, she got a faculty position at in the biology department at San Francisco State, and she set up this Science Education Partnership and Assessment Laboratory, SEPAL, very cute acronym. So that's how they got their money. And we have, the way our program works is we take graduate students from all over the College of Science and Engineering, so we're not even all biologists. We have some people who do physics, some people who do chemistry, and we're all set up with one teacher partner from the San Francisco Unified School District from either a middle school or high school. And throughout the year, we take a pedagogy support course. And actually, how I found out about this program, the first year I was at San Francisco State, I didn't know about it, but I was a TA, and I had heard that there was this science education course, and so this pedagogy course was opened up to all TAs also. And so I was able to learn about how you develop a lesson plan, like things that you're not usually taught that are really, really useful. So I learned how to develop lesson plans, and we discussed, you know, techniques to use in the classroom to increase participation, to get students to ask questions and to ask good questions of your students that would give you more than just a yes-no answer. And we even learned some more more theoretical ideas, like, you know, how do you have equity in a classroom, and how do you sort of get at these misconceptions. So it was a really useful course, and after being a TA for a year, I really wanted to be a part of this program, so I applied, and I'm so happy that I got to be a part of it. And also, while I'm talking about SEPAL and this laboratory that they have there, another idea that they have, if you're interested in making a little bit of a sustainable program, is they set up this resource lab. So a lot of teachers throughout the San Francisco Unified School District are able to come and check out resources in this sort of library where we have these lesson plan kits that all, like, the lesson plan materials are included in the kit, the ideas and tips, things that work and don't work are included, and as the school year goes on, like, we're creating new kits so that they're in this laboratory that people can come in and use. And we also have equipment like microscopes that some schools don't necessarily have enough of, lab coats, just because they're kind of fun for the kids to wear sometimes, so we bring those, and dissecting kits, and some organs, because, like, they have, I think they have a human heart, a brain, but we also collaborate with UC San Francisco, and they used to have a GK-12 program, which, where Kimberly was a postdoc, and so she has really good connections with them, and we're able to use some of their resource labs, and teachers all over San Francisco are able to use these, and so it's a really great system. And so the situation that I got, I was paired with a seventh grade middle school teacher at Francisco Middle School. And so this is sort of the northwest side of San Francisco, if you guys are familiar with the area. Let's see. So my school is right here. And, you know, it's right in the middle of this dense urban area. And our mascot was the ram. I don't take pictures very often, so I just wanted to make it look a little busier. But the way that we did it was I don't have that kind of program where I got to do entomology all year long. I was paired with a teacher, and she had California state standards that she had to meet. And so we sort of met over the course of the summer, where we had this teacher-student training boot camp week, where we got to meet our teacher, learn about how to collaborate together, and really develop some lesson plan ideas and goals, and sort of have an arc of how the curriculum would be throughout the year. And so I only got to do insects maybe two lessons over the course of the year, because I was there one day a week. And but when I was there a full day. And she taught life science, and so the days I was there, she would just have life science all day. She was supposed to be a math teacher and a science teacher, but she was able to work it out with her principal, so I wouldn't have to come twice a week, that I could just do science all day on Tuesday or Wednesday. It changed depending on what my class schedule was. But that's what we did, and I'll move on to the next one. So this was my school. It's not really the traditional demographic of the ESA. We have a lot of socioeconomically disadvantaged students, a lot of English language learners, and over the course of the year, you know, the number of students fluctuates, but I had two classes of students, and so I had about 35 students in each class. And so, you know, with me and my teacher partner there, it was still like, whoa, overwhelming to have two adults and 35 seventh graders. But, you know, normally she's just holding her own with those seventh graders, so I really liked having an experienced teacher to work with. And so my goals as a GK-12 fellow, and trying to learn about insects in particular, I'm going to try to concentrate on just my insect lessons, is that I had been a TA before, and some of these comments were made by undergraduates, and some of these were made by seventh graders. And you can kind of tell that their ideas are not that different when it comes to insects. And what that tells me is that not that much about insects is being communicated throughout their GK-12 career. So I really wanted to make sure that something was brought across to them. I mean, these are kind of the sillier ones. And actually, the goldfish one is actually a kindergartner, so I cheated with that one. But yeah, there's a lot more that they need to know. I mean, sometimes they'll be able to say, well, insects have six legs, spiders have eight. And I'm like, great. But I mean, that's not, to me, one of the coolest things about insects. I mean, I like insects because of their crazy diversity and all of their ecological strategies and how they're found pretty much everywhere, and you wouldn't even realize it. And actually, that's just on a side note, that's sort of how I got into insects, because when I was an undergraduate, I did a study abroad program in Costa Rica, and there was an entomologist on our program, and I was like, oh my god, insects are so cool, just seeing them in the tropics. And I was sort of sad. I was like, oh, I wish we had this kind of stuff in California. And then I came back to California and realized, yes, we did have this, I just was never looking at it. And so it's a really cool world that I really wanted to communicate to my students so they could sort of see it too. And so going into the school year, I had many focuses, but for the sake of time, I'm going to just say that it was really important to me to reevaluate what I was teaching. I always wanted to see what kind of goals, what I wanted the students to get out of the lesson before designing a lesson plan. Because some stuff is really fun to do, but then I was like, eh, I don't know what they're necessarily going to take away from that. So I was really always looking at what the goal of the lesson plan was. And it was really also important for me to address any misconceptions, because sometimes if a student is really set in one idea, it's hard for them to sort of see what the right idea might be just because they've assumed that this one thing is correct. I wanted to make lessons accessible to people. I mean, I like entomology, and lucky for me, I'm really good at memorizing stuff, so it's worked well for me, but not everyone likes memorizing and learning all these names and what the Latin things mean. So I wanted to make it in a way that more people could enjoy it, so that they could enjoy insects too. And because a lot of the school year I'm not really teaching about insects, I thought that what I could bring to the experience is showing just what the life of a scientist is. I mean, I don't consider myself a scientist really, but they liked hammering that home to us. Yes, even though you're grad students, you're a scientist in a seventh grade classroom. And so I just wanted to show them more about what like my life is like and how the information that they see in their textbooks is actually done. And sort of sneaking a little bit of entomology into other lessons and definitely that inquiry-based learning thing. You can't talk about that enough. And so here are the two lesson plans that I did that have to do with insects. And actually, this lesson plan I did with my undergrad students, too, when I was a TA. And it was actually so successful that I got to do it for some other, of my friends who were TAs, I got to do it in their classrooms, too. And so the goals of this lesson for me is to show students what their local insect fauna is, because I was shocked to see how much stuff is in the Bay Area. There's a lot. And I grew up in Oakland not knowing about this. And, you know, it's really important to transform that icky bug sort of feeling into, like, yeah, bugs. And, you know, just getting some appreciation for all the interesting things that insects do and their life strategies. My professor at San Francisco State, he always gets so many calls during the rainy season because people see a Jerusalem cricket for the first time, and they're like, oh, there's this new insect that's in San Francisco, and then he gets to explain to them. So, you know, we'll show them in seventh grade what a Jerusalem cricket looks like. And so the way that this lesson works is sort of similar to what of the stations idea, but they're simpler stations. And so I used a whole bunch of pinned and live specimens to set up, I guess, with 35 students, I had about 10 stations. And you have to sort of gauge and work with your teacher partner on what the classroom culture is and how students will react to this freedom. But I like to let them explore on their own and just kind of wander around and get to have casual conversations with them about insects and see what sort of pops out at them and what questions they might have. And so the way it works is you have stations set up all over the classroom. I tried to use all local insects so they could see what was there that they could go out and find later, and have like ecological questions where I would have like a local butterfly and moth and have them kind of try to figure out what sort of physical characteristics they can see that are different between the two of these that might, you know, relate to their communication. So you can pretty much design any kind of stations you want, but the goal, you know, is basically just to see what's out there and sort of give them an idea of the strategies that you can use. And then another lesson plan that I did, which was really fun, is I showed you that picture of Francisco Middle School, and it's like kind of in the middle of this, you know, very urban matrix. And all we didn't even have like a grass field there. There was a few sidewalk trees and a few like hedges that were like right near the school. But you know, I really wanted them to see what kind of insects could still be living in this urban area. It was actually funny because I give them a pre-assessment question about what animals they might find around their school, and they actually said sea lions, and I was like, what? But it's because it's in North Beach, and so it's right next to Pier 39, and so that's where we have sea lions, and so we don't have them actually at our school, but yeah, so I liked that they were aware of that and they were aware of seagulls. But I mean, sometimes students don't even make the connection that insects are animals even. And so that was actually a big goal of this one too, that these are animals. And a really cool thing about this lesson was we actually got to get out of the classroom. We never got to do field trips over the course of the year just because the money of arranging buses and the logistics of it just never worked out for us. But we got to go outside, and I was able to bring science artifacts like aspirators. I called them aspirators, not pooters. I did not trust seventh graders with that word. And I brought sweep nets and butterfly nets and beading sheets. And this book, Schoolyard Ecology, is actually designed for elementary school students. It's published by the Lawrence Hall of Science, which is nearby, and they have some really great ideas for doing like collecting in urban areas, and they actually have insect information cards too. So after we went outside and I sort of let them loose and they tried to collect as much stuff as they could, they were able to I photocopied the information guides and they were able to figure out what they had collected. And I was really impressed with some of the things they found. I mean, I knew that they would find ants, but you know, one of my students actually aspirated like a parasitic wasp. And I was like shocked. And then, you know, some of them found ladybird beetles, and there were some centipedes too. And speaking of ants, It's really cool living in San Francisco. We have the California Academy of Sciences, and my friend Kelly over there, also a San Francisco State student, helps run the Bay Area Ant Survey, or she used to help run the Bay Area Ant Survey. And so she was able to lend me forceps and like little collecting vials and data sheets. And so I got to have the students do this also while they were collecting, that, you know, you're collecting information for the Bay Area Ant Survey and trying to map out where the Argentine ants are and where more native ant species might be. And so they got to actually fill out the data sheets and look at the website later. And so just seeing like a picture like this is pretty awesome for a seventh grader. So it was really fun. And thank you, Kelly, for that. And so those are the two lesson plans that I got to do in my classroom. But other ways that I brought it in is my students got really interested in it. I mean, you know, you think seventh graders are just into themselves or whatever, but they got really interested in insects because they're not talked about a whole lot. Like, my teacher partner never would have talked about it. I tried to get her to have, like, a live specimen aquarium or terrariums around, but she was like, no. But I would bring them in for a day, and then I would take them back. But they got really into it, and some of my students would actually find insects on their own and then bring them back to me for me to identify before or after class, and so that was really cool. And I actually got to tell them how to preserve them, because one time one of them brought back a squished spider, and I was like, I have no idea what that was. But back to also the inquiry-based learning. Throughout the school year, we always tried to, at least once every other week, we would have some sort of lesson where they would create their own questions, and then they would try to answer their questions and then draw conclusions about it, and we would actually make them do lab write-ups. Those weren't super popular, but it was nice because they were like, do scientists really do this? And I was like, yes, they do. And I was able to bring in journals, scientific journals, and they were like, wow, what I'm doing is just like a miniature part of how science actually works. And so I think they thought that was kind of cool. And then earlier on, someone presented this beautiful poster symposium and science conference, and it was really fancy, and mine looks kind of not as fancy, but we were able to do it in one lesson, one two-hour lesson period. And so we had a poster symposium, and so half the students would present, and the others would have to go around and ask questions of fellow presenters, and we also had a science conference when they did their lesson on human organs. And then, you know, just using something simple like flashcards is really useful too, where you can find out their previous knowledge, get them sort of excited about what you're going to be talking about later. And also it sort of gives you an idea about what sort of language you need to use throughout the lesson. And finally, these are just two other resources that I love to use. Like, right now I'm sort of doing the miscellaneous stuff, if you guys haven't noticed. So I found this journal called The Natural Enquirer, which, if you guys haven't heard of, it's really great to use because it's a scientific journal that's designed for seventh graders. And so they have, like, scientist profiles in it, and everything's, you know, sort of in the order of, like, you know, the scientific method. And so we were able to use that with, because there were some insect ones, and so I really liked that. And then Life in the Undergrowth, it cannot be underestimated. I mean, there would be little clips I would just show at the end of class, at the beginning, and like during one sequence of like the wolf spiders mating, and then the female carrying around the egg sac on her abdomen, and then eventually them hatching and crawling on her back. That one actually got an applause from my seventh graders, and my teacher partner was like, "Whoa, they've never clapped for science videos before." But yeah, they loved that, and they told me they liked Discovery Channel. So they want to know it. It's just trying to get it to them. Oh, I thought I had an acknowledgement slide, but I guess it didn't get saved. But I do thank everyone at San Francisco State, the SEPL program, NSF, blah, blah, blah. Thank you.
We have about a minute left for questions.
Okay.
I have a question.
Oh, thank you. Oh, that's something that I wanted to mention. So in the pedagogy course, they actually every week, and it was sort of, we were like, oh, this is such a waste of time, but every week we had to fill out a timesheet saying how many hours we dedicated to, you know, being in the classroom, how many hours we dedicated to research, how many hours we were doing with our coursework, and just so we could see how much time we were spending doing everything. And actually, most people in our program are graduating in 2 years, which is really fast for a master's program at San Francisco State. And so it's been pretty successful because they wanted to really show that being a part of this program isn't detrimental to a student's research, and showing that you can be a part of it and get through and do your research just fine. Thank you.